that when you sing, when you speak, this deity is pointing to the miracle of this gift of speech, the miracle of your creative potency. So the goddess that we are working is the miracle of life and its creative potency that is in your speech. So she is pointing to this goddess. She is pointing to this goddess. She's a finger pointing to the moon of what you already have and who you already are and the incredible song that you're capable of singing. And the beauty of your voice, the beauty of your speech, the, what we can express with our voice, the tenderness of our love, and the poetry of what we share with each other. So I invite you to do what this great sage Krishnamurti would say, to kick God off of the altar and find the goddess right in here. The essence of the teachings that we're sharing here is that the cause of our suffering, our insecurity, our guilt, our shame, is that we identify with this ego mind. And this ego mind is inherently vulnerable. It is so desperate for love and so desperate for attention. And so it's so vulnerable because it's so tiny compared to this vast world. It's inherently vulnerable. And that vulnerable leads to insecurity and fear and ontological terror because it's not real. It's very ephemeral. And in this incredible ignorance, you know, our culture, our Western civilization is the culture of a conquered people. That the biblical religions were imposed upon traditional people to take away their power, to destroy their Wicca, their relationship to nature, their relationship to all the things that had given them strength, that when they were, you know, conquered by the sheer force of the Crusades, the sheer force of the Muslim and Christian armies, this religion was imposed upon them to take away. And for thousands of years, libraries were burned, sages were persecuted, witches were persecuted, and the earth religions were demonized because they might empower people. Mm-hmm. And they were told that you could only, through the mediator of the church, find something. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to, you know, I just want to put, I don't mean to put down anyone's path, but I just want to point out that your great-great-great-great ancestor who became a biblical soul was probably converted with the sword, had no choice. You could jump in the well or you could jump into this worldview. And that one of the beauties of this present time is that we have the freedom to really explore with tremendous depth and integrity and to try to find something that really rings true with our experience and to just drop all the concepts. And what Papaji was teaching was everything you are seeking, you already have. The great sage Ramana Maharshi says that God and life are inextricably bound. To be alive is to be conscious. So we want to talk about the nature of the self. So that life and consciousness are one. And the nature of the God in you, the nature of the life in you, is that God manifests as this cellular intelligence. So we've been emphasizing that it's very scary to go through life ignorant of yourself. But once the self is pointed out, its recognition is very easy and very natural, that the self is the actual intelligence in you. Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, Sri Krishna, who personifies the oversoul, the underlying intelligence of this creation, says, know this Atman. Atman is the portion of divine, a divinity, the portion of life that is a life breath in you. Know this Atman, unborn and undying, never ceasing, never beginning, deathless, birthless, unchanging forever. Knowing it birthless, it's not the quote I wanted. Okay, good. This is the one I wanted. In the Bhagavad Gita, the song Celestial Creation speaks to us and explains, know this body to be the field, and know me, the soul, to be the knower of the field. Know also that I am the sole knower of all fields, of all bodies, that there's one life, that it's the same life in all bodies. It's the same consciousness, the same intelligence, the same presence in all of us. So we're saying that the life in us, the God in us, is this presence, this lucidity. Sri Krishna calls it the knower. Sometimes it's called the cognizance. Sometimes it's referred to as mindfulness, or it's referred to as awareness, or as consciousness. We've been pointing out that the nature of creation is that every atom is a fabric of intelligence, where the nucleus manifests a field. And then that field has a capacity to take in the experience of its relationship to the fields around it and self-correct. And this act of creating and then taking in the experience and recreating that happens in every breath of our life is the essence of intelligence, the ability to learn and integrate that and recreate based on our experience. And this is what's going on in every atom and every molecule and every cell and every function of nature and every vector of physiology and anatomy in our bodies, and our bodies are a microcosm of creation. In every vector of creation, there is this omnipresent intelligence. So when we are talking about this great mystery of life and consciousness, we're talking about an ultimate intelligence that is here acting freely in every atom and molecule and cell. And we call the system a synergistic system, where like your body is an example of a synergistic system. And synergy is where everything, every part is doing is maximizing the wellness of the whole. And everything the whole is doing is maximizing the wellness of the parts. So this is what this intelligence of nature is able to do, where every atom and molecule and cell, every dimension of anatomy and physiology is synergistic. Everything the parts is doing is maximally supporting the whole. Everything the whole is doing is maximally supporting the parts. And nature is that synergistic system. Life is that expression of that ultimate intelligence. So we've grown up with a deist model, which tells us that the God lives outside of creation. When I taught at Rutgers University, one of my colleagues was Peter L. Berger, one of the most eminent sociologists of religion at his time, a very deep Lutheran. And he said that the Jews had been people of the earth, that they had had their holy mountains, their holy rivers, their holy groves, but when they were conquered, they lost their land and they lost the gods of the earth, and they were forced to put the religion in the Old Testament as a way of trying to preserve their heritage, which I thought was very, very interesting. And then he said, once you put God in a book and took God off the earth, you could do anything the hell you wanted to the earth. So now in most traditional religious spiritual paradigms, all life is sacred, the earth is sacred. And in a deist paradigm like we have, you know, God has created universal law or somehow lies outside of creation, and you can do anything the hell you want in creation. But in a panentheist paradigm like you have in many of the traditional worldviews, God does not create the world, God becomes the world. That this omnipresent intelligence is just obviously here in just every duck we look at, and every incredible little bug. Look at this bug. Oh, man. So. And every flower. Yeah. So I'm scratching my head when I think of some conceptual God that isn't right here. You know, I cannot believe how many years I spent looking for God outside of myself, and the path back home to recognizing that this divine intelligence, something we already have, something that is omnipresent in His majesty and miracle, is already who we are, already what we have, that that let us worship and honor the life within us and the life around us, that this is our highest good. So we're talking about the nature of the self. And the sage Yajnavalka explains, as a mass of salt is without inside and without outside is altogether a mass of taste, even so verily is this self without inside, without outside, altogether a mass of intelligence only. Okay? That the nature of self is this divine intelligence. That is, as salt is thoroughly and totally salt, you are thoroughly and totally omnipresent intelligence. Again, in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Indra, the king of heaven, is asked for a boon to be the most beneficial for mankind. And he says, understand me only, and reveals the doctrine of the supremacy of intelligence. These are the Upanishads, the ancient esoteric teachings, which represent the culmination of what we can comprehend. So he says, verily, without intelligence, speech does not make known to the self any name whatsoever. My mind was elsewhere, he says. I did not cognize that name. That we can only hear our name if we're present in our listening. It's that presence that gives power to the ears. For without intelligence, breath does not make known any odor. I can't smell unless I'm present in the sense of smell. My mind was elsewhere. I did not hear that sound. I did not get that. I did not cognize that sound. Verily, if there were no elements of intelligence, there would be no elements of existence. Now, here's what's really cool about what he says. I'll have to make it fit on the page here. Verily, if there were no elements of intelligence, there would be no elements of existence. For as in a chariot, the felly is fixed on the spoke, and the spokes are fixed on the hub. So he's using an example from everyday life of a chariot, and the felly, the wheel there, is fixed on the spokes, which are fixed on the hub. The element of intelligence are fixed on the breathing spirit, and the breathing spirit is truly the intelligent self-bliss, ageless. Oh, where's the rest of the quote? Ageless, immortal. So in the same way, intelligence is fixed on the breath, which is fixed on the intelligence of the self, or the bliss of the self. I thought that's incredible. That, you know, he, as a yogi who purified his body and mind, had microclairvoyant vision, where he could see the breath, and how the breath was the created this vortex, which was just like the wheel going around. He was seeing the gunas. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit more about the gunas when we have some time this morning and understand this vortex of energy that underlies this creation. Any comments or thoughts on the self before we go on? Our basic premise is that it's very scary to go through life without this self-knowledge, and that once you have this self-knowledge, you have the key to the mystery and the key to healing. Now, it's very important in this game which we call self-realization, this game we call finding God. You have to give up spiritual glamour. Most of what you've called God is glamour. Is the paraphernalia, is the vestments, is the ritual, is the outer garment of the mystery. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Osho says, give up any concept you have, because it's all a hallucination. Just drop the hallucination. And he says, the path to knowledge is self-realization. All these epiphanies that you have when you're in nature, or when you're studying, or when you're... Okay, that the path is one of self-realization. That your epiphanies are very, very precious. That your realizations are the royal road to really, really getting, really, really knowing who you are, and really accepting this great, great truth of who you are. So don't wait for any like LSD kind of psychedelic thing to happen. Don't wait for angels to surround you. Some people are clairvoyant and may see that level of consciousness out pictures angel, but for most of us, it ain't gonna come that way. It's gonna come through just these tiny realizations, and then at some point you're gonna be so clear that this is the truth, that there's everything I've wanted, I really have, that this is my essential nature. So I counsel you to drop the glamour and to simply accept what is right here and the incredible majesty and splendor of that. I hope it's useful for me to rave about the mystery this way.
It is.
Totally.
Thank you.
Totally.
So we are doing a form of chakra balancing based on an ecstatic calling out. And the meaning of this is Om. The holy word is the earth. The holy word is the heaven. Om, the holy word is that which transcends. The holy word is Mahatattva, the great ocean of intelligence. Om is the great ocean of knowledge. Om is Tapa, the great sacrifice that has become this creation. Om is Satyam, being. Om is that light which has illuminated the sun, illuminates all this creation, that which is worthy of worship. May it inspire our liberation, our merging into the self-effulgence, the nectar of immortality, the nectar of immortality that is the breath, that is the earth, that is the heaven, that is all-pervasive word of the mystery. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.